You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are, on the Fantasy Sports Network. It's good to be back in the saddle after a couple of days in the bullpen. So no rest for the wicked. Back to the grind. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Ted Sofranski is going to join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, as he does every Thursday. Then we're shaking things up a little bit. We're kicking it old school. The Crow, Warren Cromartie, is going to join me. And it's fitting that I'm rocking in the old school Expos gear today, because Warren Cromartie, old school Montreal Expo, also an MVP in the Japanese league as well. But Warren's also part of a group. He's worked hard over the years trying to get the Expos to return back to Montreal, and you know, we're hearing good things about that. So Warren Cromartie will join us. We're also kicking it old school on the program. Damon Allen's going to join us in studio, I believe, right? Damon Allen in studio. I think he's in studio. So Damon Allen, not in the building yet. That's why I wonder. But Damon Allen should be here in a couple of minutes. We'll talk some quarterbacks. One of the best quarterbacks ever to play. This dude threw, and like, you know what? He was on last time. It was like 48 miles of football field. He's moved the football up and down the field. I think he's thrown for like 74,000 yards or is it 80,000, whatever it is. Damon Allen joins us in studio. Four-time Grey Cup champion. Damon Allen joins us in studio. We're talking football, as the National Football League free agent feeding frenzy has begun, man. And there's a lot of blood in the water, and the GMs are like sharks. They're circling and they're handing out big money contracts like suburban housewives on Halloween hands out candy, all right? I don't even really know where to start, but since we weren't here yesterday, let's start with Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor, not a free agent, but the Buffalo Bills and Tyrod Taylor came to a mutual agreement. They restructured the contract. Tyrod gets the same money, although it's a shorter deal right now. Everybody wins, and I think the Buffalo Bills saw that, holy crap, man, if Mike Glennon's going to be getting $15 million a year, then you know what? Maybe we're going to hang on to Tyrod Taylor. But the bottom line in Buffalo is, as dysfunctional as the Bills are, they really were only like two wins away from being a playoff team last year. Now, you look at the game that Rex Ryan decided to punt. They should have beaten the Dolphins. And you look at about four other games that they lost because of bad coaching. You know, the Bills really aren't all that far off. The question is, can Doug Whaley now not screw this up with the upcoming draft? Robert Woods is gone. I liked Robert Woods. Dude is consistent. But the LA Rams are freaking crazy to give this guy a $40 million deal. Robert Woods just got $8 million per. Like, seriously, Brandon Marshall ain't got $6 million per for the New York Giants. And, like, that's not a recipe for disaster. Hey, it's a nice three you got going on right now with Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, and with Brandon Marshall. But it's also a pretty good cast for a reality show gone bad as well. It's, you know, yeah, I guess, sort of. And you know what? It's not like Marshall and Odell aren't going to get along or anything like that. But the thing is, it's like Odell's kind of flaky to begin with, all right? Now you're bringing in another dude. It adds to it. And I don't know, for fantasy purposes, it looks like the Giants' game plan is to run the ball about four times a game, right? So that's something to keep in our back pocket. But as far as Doug Whaley and the Bills are concerned, it clarifies things right now, all right? Now, if they're not stupid morons, and he's not a stupid idiot, but that's, you know, that's debatable. They just draft a wide receiver right now. You got Mike Williams out of Clemson. You pair him with the other Tiger and Sammy Watkins. You've got yourself a nice combo, all right? If not, and I was a big Corey Davis fan at Western Michigan, all right? I think he'd be a good fit. 6'3" wide receiver, very Antonio Brown like. He'd be a good fit for the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, with the new coaching staff, the quarterback back in place, you're not going to win with a quarterback carousel, all right? Now, Mike Glennon, a lot of people are scoffing at the Mike Glennon deal. And, hey, listen, I'm sort of scoffing at it. But the fact of the matter is, only $19 million of it is guaranteed. And at least the Chicago Bears have a plan, all right? Listen, we need a quarterback for this year. Don't forget, they've got a pretty good running back in Jordan Howard. You know, we got a quarterback for this year. And evidently, the Bears' plan is to draft a quarterback. But, for you know, for the most part, I guess, so what, DeSean Jackson just went back to Tampa. This stuff is fluid right now. Just signed with Tampa, not going to Philadelphia. San Francisco gave Pierre Garçon $16 million, man. You know, I don't know, man. If I'm Brandon Marshall's agent right now, I'm looking at all these other deals, and I'm like, yeah, I know I got a little bit of baggage, but, like, really? He gets 16. I get 12 for two. Like, San Francisco, like, they've got more money right now than a dude that's, like, been working on an oil field and he's going to a brothel. You know what I mean? San Francisco have deep pockets. They got no one on the roster. Hey, Garcia, here's 16 mil for you. Hey, the Rams are throwing money around right now. And, oh, yeah, look at the New England Patriots. Very rarely spend big money on a free agent, but they bring in Stephon Gilmore, Buffalo Bill cornerback. Interesting. And it's interesting because Bills fans think that Gilmore's been overrated, all right? And Bills fans think that Darby's actually better anyways. But it's interesting that Bill Belichick, who's the genius that he is, thinks otherwise, yet it looks like the Pats might just trade Butler for Cooks, and then suddenly instead of Malcolm Butler, they've got Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks in the rotation. It's amazing how winning teams just continue to, hit the jackpot. They bring in the tight end Allen because they don't want to pay Bennett. Now Bennett's in talks with the Raiders, which leads us to Tony Romo. Not really a hell of a lot of drama with Tony Romo. Is it going to be Denver? It's going to be Houston. I don't know. Time will freaking tell. But the fact of the matter is, Super Bowls aren't won and lost on free agency, right? We see this all the time. Oh, look at the Washington Redskins, man. They signed Josh Norman. They got DeSean Jackson. This stuff never really has a freaking impact. Super Bowls are won and lost at the draft. Game time decision. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenz. We've got a great show. One of the greatest quarterbacks to play the game. Damon Allen's going to join us. And, of course, Damon Allen, four-time Grey Cup champion. He's actually thrown for, like, more yards than anybody in the history of any sport type of deal. He might have been passed, actually, by Anthony Calvillo. Right up there, like, it's like Dan Marino, Anthony Calvillo, Damon Allen. Of course, the brother of Hall of Famer Marcus Allen. And, last time Dame was in studios, we didn't realize this until then, was he's actually a national champion, Cal State Fullerton, NCAA baseball champion. So Damon was a pitcher. That makes sense. So we're going to talk some quarterbacks. We'll get his thoughts on Patrick Mahomes, a baseball guy. Of course, his father was a baseball player. A lot of hype about him. We'll talk some NFL quarterbacks. Warren Cromartie is going to join me, former big league ball player. Longtime Montreal Expo. Of course, he played in Japan. One of the first American guys to go to Japan. He's going to join us. And we got Ted Savransky batting leadoff. Always a pleasure. Teddy, how you doing, my man?
NC. Hey, man, I'm burning the candle at both ends, my friend. You know what this time is like. It's the middle of March.
Yeah, no, it is. The real madness has begun. And this is, to me, this is better than the actual tournament. There's actually more basketball going on right now. So it's pedal to the metal for the next 10 days or so, right? I mean, you'll take a breather after next Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that next week is pretty busy, too, with the NIT and all the lesser tournaments. And there's tons of money to be made in those as well. You know, the big dance gets all the hype, but there's more games today than in the entire NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
All right. That's, and after the first, there's 67 games for the entire big dance. And today's card, tomorrow's card, loaded. And the action's better. What are we at? In Vegas, 9 a.m. to midnight. That's way long, longer than the big dance. So from a personal perspective, this weekend's better than next weekend, and I expect to make a lot of money.
And you're right about, like, I'm a big fan of the NIT, the CIT, the CBI, and all this type of stuff. It's great. You get to bet home teams as well, man. I've crushed home team moneyline parlays over the years in this spot. But I look forward to it as well because everyone pays attention. You get these short prices, home team laying 3 or 4 points even. But nevertheless, so... We got conference tournaments going on as we speak right now, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I really enjoyed your column, Teddy, and I know a lot of work went into it over at covers.com on the experts page. Your analysis as far as criteria that win championships, and it's not just your criteria because facts are facts, and it's amazing. And I always enjoy breaking this down with Mark Lawrence as well. He usually has like a 10 or 11 mark checklist. Of the the last 20 teams to win. And really, it's amazing. The only anomaly is the one team, which was UConn twice, that had busted up those numbers.
Yeah, and UConn's the only one that got me every other year. And this is an article, I started writing it probably about 15 years ago, just as an exercise. Hey, who were the past champions, and what can we derive from looking at those past champions and extrapolating forward to see how that projects into this year's field. And I've been writing the article. I think I've written like 18 of them now. And every year but two, among my list of contending teams, the national champion has come from that list. The one team that got me twice was UConn. But UConn's not going to make the big dance this year, so I don't have to worry about the Huskies.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about Kevin Ollie busting everything up. All right, let's go through some of the things that caught my eye. We encourage people to go to Teddy's page over at Covers Experts to see the full article. But everybody always talks about, ooh, who's the Cinderella going to be? Who's the dark horse going to be? And, okay, that's fine for the mainstream and the public and all that type of stuff. But for you guys that are betting this stuff, if you want to talk about a sleeper, you want to talk about a Cinderella, go as far as betting them to win their bracket. You know, go as far as them to win the Final Four, because they don't win the championship game. They just don't. And the fact is, since 1997, only one team has been less than a 3 seed. Only one. Hello, UConn.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the criteria are real simple, okay? To win 6 games over 3 weekends, you can't just be good. You got to be great. And the weaknesses come out if you're not. And with the exception of those two UConn teams, everyone's been great consistently when you're talking about winning national titles. Of course, this year, as in many years, there's not one or two contenders. There's a dozen plus legitimate contenders to win the national title. But those contenders, in my mind, do not come from the mid-majors, and that means Gonzaga's not winning it, and Wichita State's not winning it. And you know, we've seen those runs. We've seen Butler make back-to-back championship games. Wichita State went to the Final Four. We still talk about George Mason all these years later, but none of those teams cut down the nets.
19 straight, Teddy. 19 straight winners from either the Big East, the Big Ten, the Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, or ACC.
That's it. One of those 6 conferences. So as good as the Zags have been, and Gonzaga's live to make a deep run in this tournament, I don't expect them to win it all.
A lot like SMU, right? SMU's a good basketball team, but they're not good enough to win 6 times, right?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, you listed the 6 conferences where the champions are coming from.
Yeah, exactly.
And until proven otherwise, we're going to continue to bet those 6 conferences and nobody else when it comes to opportunities to win the actual title.
And here's something else. And, you know, it's funny because this probably isn't sexy. People are probably, well, these numbers are kind of dull when we tell them this. And this is for you, everyone, filling out your brackets even. So not your bettors, but your bracket players. 22 of the last 26 winners have either been a 1 or a 2 seed. So, like, really, in all actuality, we really only have, you know, let's say the 1 and the 2 seeds, maybe a couple of the 3s. So, you know, it's essentially 8 teams that legitimately have a chance. That one really caught my eye as well. This is something that, you know, you've talked about, and I talk about this, and Mark Lawrence talks about this a lot. Having guys that are going to be NBA draft picks as well, isn't it, Teddy? Talent really matters at this time of the year, doesn't it?
You look at it again and again, and throughout the course of the last 20, 25 years of NCAA tournament history, the teams that win titles have lottery picks, certainly have first-round talent, and oftentimes multiple first-round NBA players. And the teams that don't, they don't get there. and it's cut and dry. It's very clear when you go back and look. So
that's
one
a
of
good
things,
point. Look at Butler. You mentioned Butler. They had Gordon Hayward on that team. Gordon Hayward's about
too.
To cash in and sign a max contract. How many of these teams right now have a guy that's going to be an all-star in the NBA, right?
Only a handful.
Yeah.
Don't forget Shelvin Mack from that team, who's also been, he's not Gordon Hayward in the NBA, but he's certainly been a contributor at the next level. Yeah, so they would not have won, they've been to the title game either year without Shelvin Mack.
No, it's a good point. I even go back to the Michigan team that beat Seton Hall years ago. It was a surprise at the time, but Glenn Rice was an NBA star. Ramil Robinson was a big-time draft pick. Loy Vaught hung around the NBA for a while, made a lot of money, you know, like, yeah.
He was a great, if you wouldn't have been in with the Clippers, people would have known Loy Vaught in the NBA level. He played his whole career with the Clippers when the Clips were awful.
Yeah.
He was a double-double guy for a decade plus.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. Something that I like, too, coaches that have been to a Final Four before. You know, coaching experience to me matters in this, Teddy, in this tournament. You know, I look like a team like the Ducks, a team that, you know, they've done well in the tournament, but they can still get further. You know, it seems like there is quite a climb for coaches. You look at the Millers, the Millers of Dayton and in Arizona. There, you know, it seems like coaches do have to pay their dues and have some heartbreaking losses in this tournament, Teddy, before they win.
Like Steve Fisher, huh?
Yeah, well, except.
I mean, there's I haven't seen any hard numbers that are going to show me that a coach who has had previous tournament success or has been to a Final Four is more likely to make another Final Four. And certainly nothing that doesn't correlate any with talent, you know, where here's this coach coming out of nowhere. I mean, think about Jay Wright with Nova last year. I mean, Villanova had been consistent underachievers come tournament time.
Yeah, true.
Last year, they got their run and boom.
But how about the fact, Teddy, because I've heard different arguments about this, and I've even spoken to coaches. I've done shows, you know, years ago, we were lucky, man. I did the entire tournament with Rick Majerus. You know, I was hanging out with Rick Majerus talking basketball all day off camera and stuff, and Mick Cronin with Cincinnati, et cetera. And I've heard different things. You know, Rick told me that, may he rest in peace, he said, coaching, once you're in a tournament, if your players aren't good, you're kind of screwed. Like, he said, the players are kind of coaching themselves on the court. And I've heard others tell me that the coaches can navigate through. Like, a good example is a guy like Beilein. Beilein is a good tournament coach, isn't he, Teddy? Like,
sure.
You know, can you just, you know, are there good tournament coaches and bad tournament coaches?
You know, in a sense, yes, but the bad tournament coach can go on a heck of a run. I remember when I came to Vegas, Boeheim. Bet against coach, bet against Syracuse. You know, the guy can't coach in tournaments. And they had all of these early exits out of the big dance. And then what happens? You know, oh, I got Carmelo Anthony. And all of a sudden, I win a national title. You know, talent trumps coaching. I firmly believe that. But even with the best talent, you look at Duke. Duke's had the best talent in college basketball for the better part of the last 25 years. Do they win the national title every year? No, they don't. Not even close. Does Kentucky win the national title every year? No, they don't. So, even with elite talent, you know, coaching certainly factors in the equation, as does luck. Let's not, you know, if somebody hits a half point or a half court shot to beat you, you know, that's the end of your dance run that year. And wait till next year.
All right, Teddy, we've only got a couple of minutes left. So quickly on this, before we pick your brain, as far as tonight is concerned, 17 of the last 19 tournament winners had seven losses or less. That's something to keep our eye on. So going through Teddy's column, and he eliminates a lot of other very good basketball teams. But the four teams that Teddy has circled right now to fall into this criteria, two of them from the Pac-12, Arizona, UCLA, a team that actually I think is a dark horse because you talk about an NBA player that Purdue has, and the defending national champion Villanova Wildcats, who I'm a fan of because they can play any style. They're physically tough. They're well coached. They're gritty. They got it all. You want to play a street ball? We'll play street ball. You want to get into a track meet? We can score. So I like what Villanova brings to the table. So Arizona, UCLA, Purdue, and Villanova are the teams that meet your check marks.
Absolutely. And Oregon didn't meet it by this much. You know, I mean, if I could have made a judgment call and put Oregon in that list, which is why when we talk about the best tournament bets to make, I'll tell you the one bet I'm going to make as soon as I see it. That's going to be Pac-12 wins over, you know, for the total tournament wins over, because they have three teams who can legitimately make a run to the Final Four. And as you know, Gabe, the West Coast teams sometimes get overlooked. Pac-12 is very real. This year in this tournament.
And speaking of NBA players, yeah, of course, a lot of people think Ball could be the potentially the top pick in the draft. So UCLA playing in your backyard tonight. UCLA and the USC Trojans. USC upset them once, and then UCLA laid the wood to them. I think it was a 32-point, 102 to a 70 or whatever the hell it was in that ballpark. What do you make of tonight's game, Teddy? And the number is pretty high as far as the total. And, you know, I remember, you know, it's one thing betting this stuff over 162 and stuff like that. But we're getting up to these 167s pretty high. And I notice UCLA keep going out of the number because they almost have NBA totals now.
Yeah, so, sure. And I don't know if you were watching last night, but the second half over went over on the last bucket of the game and then the nightcap, and the crowd went nuts. It's fun to have these tournaments in Vegas, man. It really is. And I expect to be down there. I'm not going to be down there tonight. There's just too much going on, but I'm hopefully we'll be down there tomorrow for the semifinal games. But I'll tell you what, I mean, USC didn't just beat him in the first meeting. They beat him in both meetings last year. So the Trojans have certainly found a way to score against UCLA. And we know what Andy Enfield's teams do come tournament time. They're bombs away Defensively, USC, however, is going to have issues with UCLA, just like they did last time out. So I know this total is sky high, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't bet the under in this game. I think it's going to – we've seen the reports from the T-Mobile Arena. The sight lines are good.
Yeah.
Players like shooting there, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see another shootout in a series that's been filled with them in recent meetings.
And plus, USC – no, they're going to get in my opinion. But at the same point in time, a lot of the people will sort of have them on that bubble and stuff. Ooh, they got in with the win against Washington. But even if they get down, they're not going to quit. They're going to play this to the final whistle. He's, you know, he doesn't have the luxury of saying, well, we'll just, you know, we're getting pasted. We'll kick back right now. How about Michigan, Teddy? I mean, you know, the word on the street was the supposed wise guy play against Michigan because of this. And I was thinking this morning, I don't know, that seems like a sucker trap, man. That, you know, I don't know, I didn't think Michigan was going to beat Nebraska by 30 the other night either, right? Like, you know, we're talking about peaking at the right time. This Michigan team's peaking at the right time. Walton's playing good basketball right now. I mentioned Beilein being a good coach. You think they can go on a run in this Big Ten tournament? And I mean, if they can play like this in practice jerseys, just wait till they get their uniforms back.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever had a near-death experience?
Yes.
Exactly. How do you walk around the next couple of days?
Yeah,
you're walking around. You're
feeling lucky. Yeah, you're on adrenaline and you're feeling
exactly,
lucky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Michigan is playing. They got light feet right now. And I thought it'd be one of two things were going to happen today. Either they were going to come out and they weren't, you know, they were just, the focus wasn't going to be there and they were going to get beat, or they were going to win big and be live to win this tournament. Look, the Wolverines don't play any defense. They're not a good defensive team. Offensively, they're as good as it gets in the Big Ten. They've got that adrenaline going right now. Momentum matters come tournament time. I'm not stepping in front of Michigan. I'll probably, let's see what the matchup is, but I will probably be on them tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, they can beat anybody in the conference, exactly. All right, Teddy, we got to get out of here. It's always a pleasure. Teddy's heating up right now, and he's putting the midnight, he's putting the work in, man, around the clock. So check him out over at sportsmemo.com or go to Covers Experts. Go to Teddy's page. You can read the article we just talked about and get his blazing picks this weekend. Always a pleasure, Teddy.
Cheerio.
There's Ted Safransky with us from Las Vegas, Nevada. All right, we got Damon Allen joining us. So we've got Warren Cromartie. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up next. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I understand Damon Allen is in the building. Good stuff. So Damon Allen, the legend, Hall of Famer, will join us in studio in a couple of minutes. We'll talk some NFL quarterbacks, NFL draft, NFL free agency, and all that other stuff. But let's bring in a man that I was a big fan of growing up, a member of an electric, explosive outfield that was the talk of Major League Baseball, along with Andre Dawson and Ellis Valentine. Longtime Montreal Expo, man known as the Crow, former MVP of the Japanese League as well. And somebody who's put a lot of work in to try to get Major League Baseball back to the city of Montreal. Warren Cromartie joins us. The Crow, what's up, Crow? How you doing, my man?
Hey, Abel, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, man. It's always a pleasure. You know, we had Dave Van Horn on the show last week. I was getting goosebumps just hearing his voice talking old school Expo baseball. And I get the same hearing your voice right now.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave is an icon. You know, he's seen every Expo they ever put on a uniform since 1969. So, and he made that Hall of Fame. So, he's a voice.
You know, one of the guys I just mentioned, Ellis Valentine, I always tell people, man, he had a great arm. He had a great arm. Dave Parker had a great arm, too. Ellis once told me that him and Parker a couple of times, you know, would mess around and have, you know, have a couple of competitions and stuff like that. Vladimir Guerrero had a great arm, too, but was Vlad's arm as good as Dave Parker and Ellis Valentine? How good were those guys' arms?
Well, you know, that's the funny thing, because I've been asked that question a lot of times as far as right-handed. You know, you can't, don't forget Dave Winfield.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave Winfield had a rocket of an arm also during that time. You know, a couple of guys, but Ellis had a shotgun of an arm, and the good thing about Ellis, watching Ellis was fundamentally sound, and he's pretty accurate. You know, you didn't really need a cutoff man for Ellis. Matter of fact, he hated when you cut his, would take it infield. You don't never cut his balls coming in, but But Ellis had a great arm. He's very accurate with it. Dave Winfield, as you said, also. You know, Roberto Clemente had a great arm. And
Vladdy was a little wild, time. Though, right, Warren? You're right. Vladdy was a little wild at times.
Yeah, Vladdy threw the ball. But, you know, it'll get there, but it could be 20 miles in the air, and everybody can score. But, you know, he had a great arm there also. So we've been pretty lucky with the Expos. And during that time when I was playing, I had some guys that were great. And even Witten. For the Toronto Blue Jays had a good arm during that time too. So it was quite a sight to see.
You know, I'm rocking an Expo jersey right now, the home jersey, and it's amazing. There's a Twitter feed out there, and your Twitter name's the best. Tweet me, homies. It doesn't get cooler than that. But I think you'll like this one. Maybe even know it. It's Super Sports 70s, and all it is, man, are pictures of you guys and. You know, Billy Martin and Earl Weaver and, like, Kareem. It's just sort of sports nostalgia. And, you know, the baseball uniforms were just great, man. Like, you know, like the Houston Astros with J.R. Richard and the colors and the old-school San Diego Padres uniform. When you were playing, did you realize how cool they were when you were playing? Or is it now you look back, you're like, man, those were sweet stuff.
Well, yeah, I think more now to get a chance to sit back and you look at the uniforms today with Under Armour and Nike, those uniforms today. But back we playing in the 70s when you got the Houston Astros with those tricolor uniforms, the Expos that we had the tricolor hats. You had Pittsburgh Pirates with all the stars on them during that time. So it was pretty basic, but, you know, you knew who your teams were right away. So, you know, it's like everything else, my man. Everything has changed, but I wouldn't change the time for our uniform. We had a little personality with those unis.
Hopefully we see that back in Montreal again. So I did a show in Montreal. I don't live there anymore, but it was my 15th anniversary and my first show in Montreal a couple of months ago. And I went back and Mitch Melnick came. We were at Champ Sports Bar. We kicked it old school. Mitch Melnick was there. And I said, Mitch, you're in the know. What's going on with the Expos? And now, especially with Mitch Garber being as rich as he is, I was like, so is this going to happen? I hear good things, but at the same point in time, somebody's got to make this happen. You know, we've seen, you know, the Jays are playing the Pirates again this year. They're going to sell a lot of tickets and that. You've been part of the Montreal Baseball Project, Warren. And I think it's good that Manfred is as pro-Montreal as he is. And I think it's good that they're talking about Vegas right now because Manfred's always said there's got to be two teams. And there's never really been a second city besides Montreal that was serious, man. Mexico City's not happening. And, you know, Charlotte, Portland, they're not doing this. We know the mayor of Montreal wants this. What's your take on this, Warren? What's your feeling? What can you tell us? What can you tell Expo fans?
Well, let me start from the beginning here. I started this journey 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, when I started to just to get the ball rolling and trying to get Montreal to talk baseball again, because it's been a really unfortunate thing. It's 11.5 years now since the Expos haven't had their team. It's been taken away to the Washington Nationals, and you know, we never had good ownership. I think that was one of the most important things that we were lacking. The only ownership we've ever had was Charles Brockman, the original owner who bought the ball club. And, you know, I've been on this crusade last 5.5 years just to get the city talking and get the right people involved and put a group together. And, you know, one thing led to another. And in between that time, I brought a couple of things back, a couple of galas back with the 81 team, 94 team. But yeah, Somewhere along the line, we lost Gary Carter in the process of all of that. And, you know, I think that really, with his spirit and all, losing Gary and the journey I just started, I pretty much called the city out and said, you know, hey, what are you guys going to do for Gary? Here's a guy that stayed in Montreal, lived in Montreal, did everything for the Expos, first one to go in the Hall of Fame with the Expo cap on, was big in the community. I said, what are we going to do for him? So with that said, I think the momentum started with that, and you know, he caught fire a little bit. We got a lot of allies out there. A lot of talk about us getting our team back. The commissioners, Major League Baseball, realize this now. We do have a group. I'm very proud of the group that we put together. We are ready for baseball to come back. We are capable and ready for it to happen when it does happen. There is no team now for sale. I think Major League Baseball ought to start talking about expansion sometime soon here in regards to 32 teams, something that they want to do. Even up the Major League Baseball as far as the travel. That way you won't have to play so many interleague games as well. So we're sitting good. The last 3 years, we've had two exhibition games toward the end of spring training that pretty much put us on the map and let the whole world see exactly how serious we are. We had about 60,000 plus a total of 3 years. Now we're going on 300,000 people coming to watch two games in Montreal for a city that doesn't have a baseball game, so a baseball team. So, you know, we're making the right noise. We're doing the things behind the scenes. We have a mayor who's enthusiastic about it as well. So I'm very pleased where we are. Each day we're getting closer to getting our team back. We are going to get the Expos back. And as you said, right now, Major League Baseball, the commissioner is talking about us and maybe Vegas because they're going to need two teams to rectify this thing. So I think right now we just got to be patient for it to happen, but I'm liking where we are right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, patience is exactly. It's, you know, everyone wants it overnight, man, but, you know, step by step. Yeah, yeah, step by step. So, hey, you, like a lot of other people that were in Montreal, are in Florida. And I want to ask you about the Marlins. You know, it really sucks, man. Jose Fernandez not around anymore. This guy was just, not only was he just so good, but he was fun to watch. His charisma, you know, I like the new school guys like that, like him and Harper and Puig, guys that bring some fun to the game, man. And he brought that fun to the game. But with that being stated, there's still a lot of young talent on this ball club. And I'm looking at their outfield, man. We talked about you guys, but, you know, when you got Yelich, you got Ozuna, and you got Stanton. It's a pretty fun outfield to watch, isn't it?
Well, you got a bunch of, you know, this is a young man's game right now as far as the outfield. You know, you got a pretty good outfield out there in Pittsburgh, too, with those three guys out there with Kutch leading the way out there. Now, you know, like you said, you got standing right field for the Marlins. You got Yelich, Ozuna. They move Ozuna from center to left field now. Yelich is pretty much going to be patrolling the territory there. So, you know, something the other day that I saw, the best outfield, the young outfield, the top best five best young outfielders that played the game. And Valentine, myself, and Dawson, we were number two. I was very proud of that, but also surprised at that. But, you know, it is something that playing the outfield, you watch these young kids today, usually they get called up. They play together in the minor league, they get called up together. So I think with the Marlins right now, with their team, I think a part of them staying healthy. I think Stanton's got to play over 100 some odd games and stay healthy out there a little bit, and Ozuna's got to pretty much turn it around. So
yeah,
it's great watching these young kids put it all together.
Yeah, you're right. It's crazy how it's changed now, man. Now, basically, center fielders are like football players and stuff, right? Like the 4-4 speed.
You look at that Trout out there, the way he's built out there. He's still pretty solid. So
yeah. Hey, Crow, it's always a pleasure, my man. You know, I'm open, actually. Some of the Expo guys, Matt Ross, contacted me about coming down to Cooperstown for Tim's induction. And I'm hopefully I'm going to be able to get down there. But keep up the good work, bro. It's always a pleasure catching up with you.
I really thank you so much. And, you know, once a Montreal, always a Montreal. And, yes, I'll be there watching Tim going to the Hall of Fame at the end of July. But, you know, keep pushing the Expos. Keep wearing your apparel and the fans out there. Be a little patient with it because, you know, time is coming here. We're going to get our team back in Montreal with a brand new stadium too, my man.
Yeah, got to keep the dream alive. Hey, Warren, always a pleasure, my man.
Thank you so much.
There's Warren Cromartie. We didn't even get a chance to talk some Japanese baseball when he was one of the first guys to go over there, and they crushed it when he went there. All right, speaking of killing it, Damon Allen joins us in studio next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. It's our honor to welcome the Hall of Famer and a four-time Grey Cup champion, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play the game, and, of course, a national champion with Cal State Fullerton on the diamond as well as we talk some March Madness. Maybe we'll get Damon's March Madness pick as well, though. I don't think Cal State Fullerton's going to be here unless they win the Big West tournament, but that's besides the point. Damon, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good. We just had Warren Cromartie on, old school baseball player.
Baseball,
man.
Yeah, Montreal.
Yeah, Montreal Expos. Who are you a fan of growing up, baseball team?
I was a big fan of, like, when I was a kid playing Little League Baseball, I was a big fan of the Padres, right?
Really?
Huh? Willie McCovey and all those guys. Yeah. They had those crazy uniforms, the brown and yellow uniforms.
Yeah. Great uniform. And we, great, man.
You used to go to hat day and helmet day, and they used to give you those little plastic hats and bats.
Yeah, it's so, see, in baseball, you got good memories in that. A little plastic. And going as a kid, I used to eat the ice cream. I had a little mini helmets and stuff. It's great stuff. I used to collect the CFL ones, too, man. Derek Queen used to have every CFL helmet. All right, so Tony Romo. Tony, we're live right now, so anything can happen. But Tony Romo was supposed to be released. I told you guys time and time again that if they released him in June, that his salary cap hit would be stretched out over 2 years instead of this year. So I was surprised that they would do this as quickly as they did. Now we understand that since the Broncos and the Texans both actually want him, they might just trade for him right now instead of him technically being released. So this is a fluid situation. But I ask you, Damon, what's your take on Tony Romo? He's 36 years old right now. And, you know, there's two schools of thought, that he has a lot of gas left in the tank. And the other thought is, I read one unnamed GM said, he's capable of taking it to the Super Bowl, but he's also capable of breaking his leg in the first preseason game. So he's not worth the risk to us. What's your take on Tony Romo right now?
Well, I think with a trade with Tony Romo, they would look at the two teams that actually desperately need a quarterback that can get them to the Super Bowl right away.
Yeah.
And so with that, yes, you have to question his ability to stay healthy. This is his 15th season going in. He's played five games in two seasons. So if it's a young team, I'm pretty sure a young team wouldn't go in that direction. But if it's a veteran team, like a Houston that went to the playoffs last year, like a Denver Broncos, they may take that shot in bringing in a veteran quarterback that can take them to the next level.
And if you bring Tony Romo in, you almost have to have a capable backup, don't you? You can't just be all in. Romo, we don't need anything else. So if you look at that, if you're Denver, it's like, well, you got Paxton Lynch. You drafted the kid in the first round, so if Romo gets hurt, then, hey, we're stuck with a kid that we thought we liked enough to take in the first round. And similar situation. I don't know what they're going to do there. You got Brock Osweiler, man, in Houston as well. Poor Osweiler. And Osweiler's, like, never wanted. It's always, sorry, Brock, you got to go, man.
But those are their intangibles. It's very difficult to actually judge a quarterback. You can look at the size, his ability to throw, how he can play in a few games, but the intangibles that you don't see, longevity, making great decisions, and being tough in the pocket, and making, and playing the position the way it's supposed to be played, that's the thing you can't judge. But the fact that you have the Denver Broncos that still have a very good defense, you have the Houston Texans that have a very good defense, and with a healthy Jay Watt, they're going to be pretty good and have a pretty good receiving core. So those are the two teams that really make sense, because they feel that they're a game or two away from actually going to the Super Bowl.
Now, you played in your 40s, right? So 36 years old, how did you feel at 36? And I think Romo, he's telling people, I'm in a lot better shape. I'm a lot fresher. I got fresh legs, so to speak. But they're fragile legs, but you got fresh legs, right? What do you look at his age? I mean, we look at Tom Brady moving in on 40 right now. He's still playing. Seems like players sort of hit the wall overnight, man. Like they say with fighters, right? They age in between rounds. But I still think Romo could play for a couple of more years if he stays healthy.
Well, the fact that I said if he's able to come off his injury over the last couple of years, because I think he hurt his back. So in that instance, I don't think, nowadays players at 30-something years old or 40-something years old, they're doing a better job of taking care of their body. And so health-wise, I was surprised he was going in his 15th season, but he still looks like he has the ability.
He's been around this long.
Ability actually to take a team to a Super Bowl.
All right, so Tyrod Taylor. I'm a Buffalo Bill fan. Tyrod Taylor, there's a lot of talk. Ooh, they don't want to have to pay him all this money. The fact is, we just saw Mike Glennon get $15 million a year. I like Tyrod Taylor. The criticism on Tyrod Taylor is that he doesn't read defense as well. That when you blitz him, he's not the tallest guy, he doesn't read defenses, and there are wide receivers that are open all the time, and he doesn't see them. And our boy on camera two over here drives him crazy. He goes to the games, and he comes back, and he's like, I'm sitting here, and I'm just seeing guys, like, waving their arms at him, and he can't see them. But he's only been a starter for 2 years in the National Football League. Can a quarterback get better at this?
he has the upside to get better. I mean, when you look at Tyrell Taylor, he's very similar to Russell Wilson. And so, you know, even though Russell Wilson came on right away, Tyrell might need some years. And, you know, going in his third year or his fourth year, he may be a very good football player and a very good quarterback. What do you do? Is there any other quarterbacks that are out there that you can get
that can take
his place? Or is it a young guy that you can draft that can take his place? And then that means you're starting all over a little bit. So he's a young quarterback. I feel that they should keep him. I think he's in the same situation as Tony Romo was with the Dallas Cowboys. You can't find anybody to replace him. He's not one of the elite quarterbacks, but he's just outside of the realm. And so unless you're going to trade him for a Brady to come to Denver Broncos, or the Buffalo Bills, then you're not going to make that move.
There's an old saying on the street, man, if you're going to run, you better know where you're running to, right?
Absolutely.
that's true. That's what I was telling Bills fans. You want to get rid of this guy. Cardell Jones, not ready. All right, Vince Young. Trying to make the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the Canadian Football League. He arrived yesterday in Regina. A ton of people at the press conference today. To me, Vince Young's one of the best college quarterbacks I've ever seen play. Like, man, this guy could ball. That performance in the Rose Bowl in the championship game against USC was freaking epic. And he wasn't a bad NFL quarterback either. We're talking about a guy that, you know, was a 10-game winner, had some personal issues. I don't know. As a gambling man, Damon, I wish Vince the best, but I think it's a lot harder for a lot of these guys coming to Canada than they realize once they get here, isn't it?
Well, it's not going to be easy for him, especially not playing for 4 or 5 years. But he's a big name. You have to believe there's some upside potential in him still as a player. And I think he wants and he has a desire to go back to the National Football League. And so there's no better way and no better league to be a quarterback and prepare yourself to go back down and play in the National Football League.
So shouldn't Johnny Manziel do this then?
Well, I think it creates a buzz in this Canadian Football League, and so Johnny Manziel should be in this league as well.
Yeah, but for his own, like if Johnny says, listen, I want to play football, part of this is a trust factor, right? Because they know, okay, you can make plays if you're on the field, but we don't know if you're going to show up. Are you going to be sober? Are you going to get wasted? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? Are you going to go to Vegas with a fake mustache and not tell us, right? So he basically just needs to show you got to show up on time every day to work. That's what it comes down to.
Well, it actually comes into play what kind of quarterback you want to be, desire to play the game of football. It's really a personal thing. I mean, how good do you really want to be?
Yeah.
I mean, you're a great college football player. To get to that next level, I mean, it takes dedication, commitment, hard work.
I don't see how he beats Kevin Glanow for the starting position. You know, Kevin's almost like one of these CFL quarterbacks you were talking about. He's not a CFL legend, but he's good. You know what I mean? Like,
we're going to see from the time they sign him to the time at training camp what kind of progression that he'll make and how fast he'll be able to make it. And
what kind of shape he's in.
And what kind of shape he is in as well. And so, you know, with that, I mean, but the fact is they signed a big name. It is creating a buzz in the Canadian Football League, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree. And, you know, they have a new stadium. They sell a lot of jerseys. And, you know, the Rough Riders know what they're doing on this. All right, Damon, unfortunately, we're already at a racetrack right now, but it's always a pleasure. We'll definitely be seeing Damon more frequently here at the Fantasy Sports Network. Can't wait for the start of the Canadian Football League season as well. We're going to come back with our DraftKings lineup of the day and our best bets of the day. All right, let's give you our DraftKings lineup of the day. Let's start off with a player that we take often and with good reason. Why wouldn't we, man? The guy's Mr. Rock Steady Consistent. Mike Conley, 46 or more DK points in 4 of his last 5 games, 41 or more in 5 straight. In 3 games against the Clippers this year, he's averaged 52.8 DraftKings points. So in other words, Mike Conley's in my lineup tonight. Victor Oladipo's back in a rotation for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Not a ton of upside here.
but he should be able to give us 25, 30. We'll get our 5-6 times minimum return here. In his first game back the other night, he finished with 16 points and 5 rebounds for 23 DK points. I think he gives us 25, 30 here tonight. All right, this guy's got a ton of upside right now, especially with Phoenix. I think Bledsoe could be out tonight. TJ Warren, $6,100. 25 or more DK points in 9 of his last 10 games. He's getting a hell of a lot more minutes since PJ Tucker's been traded to the Raptors. Lakers give up the fourth most points to this position, 43 points per game to the small forward. I think TJ Warren goes off tonight. It's the biggest total on the board by far, guys. 228 points expected to be scored in this basketball game. All right, Saric. Hey, listen, Saric's a little pricey right now, but he keeps putting the numbers up, so we're going to keep on going back to the well. 36 or more, 9 of his last 10. The Blazers are a sieve on defense, guys. He's going to get his chances here. I'm expecting 40, 45 DK points from Saric tonight. All right, we're going to go with Alan Williams, focusing in on this Lakers and this Suns game. I'll tell you what, man. Remember, it was like 2 weeks ago I was giving you Williams at $3,000? He's $6,500 now. but... You know why he's $6,500 now? Because he's put up 29 or more DK points in 5 of his last 6 games. This is his first crack at the Lakers. He only played 5 minutes when they played the Lakers 3 weeks ago. So he's going to do a lot of damage here tonight. All right, speaking of the Lakers, Jordan Clarkson. I'm not a big Jordan Clarkson fan. If I was a coach or a general manager, I wouldn't have this kid on my team. But from a fantasy standpoint, he puts points up, all right? Very, very consistent. In fact, the last time he was held to under 20 points was February the 6th, all right? You believe that? 20 or more DK points in 9 straight games. He's not going to go off, but he's going to give us 25, 30, 32, et cetera, tonight for $5,300. Here's a Laker that I do like. And I would scrap the entire thing in L.A. Randall is like the one guy that shows up. I'm a big Randall fan. This kid freaking brings it, man. 55 DK points his last game versus the Mavs. 66 a couple of games ago. He's in his own. And Tristan Thompson. He averages about 30 DK points a game when he plays the Pistons. He's going to get a ton of boards tonight. As far as our best bets are concerned, we're going to take the Spurs, though. Well, the Thunder got problems right now. Spurs are actually good in back-to-backs, and they rested their big two. Spurs win tonight. We're going to lay the 5.5 with the Suns. It sounds kind of crazy, but if you look at the Suns, they own the Lakers. They kill them. And the Suns have been beating teams at home recently and covering numbers. We're going to lay 5.5 with Phoenix. I'm crazy, I know. I'm going to go over the number, 228.5. Last 4 times these two teams have played, it's gone over the number. College basketball, we're going to roll the dice with some underdogs. Texas Longhorns, plus 10.5. We're going to go over 137.5, Texas and West Virginia. And give me the 8 points with the Rutgers Scarlet Knights in a Big Ten tournament. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.